Welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site hcplive.com. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Before we introduce our topic and our guest today, just a reminder that Lungcast is available on all your favorite streaming platforms. Subscribe to @Lungcast on YouTube to get new and archived episodes, as well as interview segments and episode highlights as they come out. A link to the show page, as well as the American Lung Association and HCP Live homepages for Lungcast, can be found in each episode description. For those of you who prefer a podcast, you can subscribe to Lungcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and your favorite listening platforms. You can also register for more respiratory news and insights at both lung.org and hcplive.com. Lung cancer is the leading cause of death from cancer worldwide, representing about 18% of all cancer deaths, and causes more deaths, almost 2 million, which represent more than breast, colorectal, cervical cancers combined, and these are cancers for which population-based screening programs exist. Only 15% of the patients with lung cancer are still alive after about 5 years from diagnosis. This is mainly because approximately 70% of patients have advanced disease at the time of diagnosis. This grim prognosis is, however, changing. The advent of targeted therapies for certain lung cancers and the addition of immunotherapy to the regimen of many have improved responses and disease-free survival in those with advanced lung cancer. Lung cancer screening with the low-dose CT scan is also improving the prognosis because this test has been found to diagnose early-stage disease where curative surgery is more likely. The concept of using low-dose computed tomography to screen for lung cancer dates back almost 3 decades. Early observational studies on high-risk but asymptomatic subjects showed that low-dose CT detected more lung cancers than chest radiographs, and many of the detected cancers were early stage, but mortality benefit was not observed at those times. This led to a definitive study in the United States, the National Lung Screening Trial, or NSLT, a randomized trial of over 50,000 high-risk current and former smokers comparing low-dose CT screening to screening with chest radiography. In 2011, the NSLT reported a statistically significant 20% lung cancer mortality reduction in the LDCT arm. As a result, in 2013, USPSTF made a Level B recommendation for this screening technique, initiating coverage for the procedure by third-party payers through the Affordable Care Act, and Medicare coverage followed shortly thereafter. We are now just over a decade since coverage for low-dose CT screening for lung cancer based on this USPSTFB recommendation was put into place. Thought by most to be a life-saving procedure for those at risk, the uptake of this screening by individuals, although increasing, has been slower than expected. Because of its ability to find early-stage lung cancer at a point in time when significant cures can be expected, this procedure is highly promoted by major public health and advocacy organizations. Several challenges or hurdles have been met along the way when screening centers are put into place and when population-level screening is initiated. To discuss the landscape of low-dose lung cancer screening and how things have evolved over the last 10 years, we have with us Dr. Mary Pasquinelli, who holds a doctorate in nursing practice and is a nurse practitioner in the Division of Pulmonary, Critical Care, Sleep, and Allergy at the University of Illinois Health System and is director of the Lung Screening Program. She specializes in lung cancer and lung cancer screening and pulmonary nodule management. She sees patients in the pulmonary clinic who have pulmonary nodules, those who are identified for screening for lung cancer, as well as running a smoking cessation program for those wanting to quit. She also sees patients after they are diagnosed with lung cancer in the medical oncology clinic. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Well, to level set for our listeners, please remind us of the current criteria to make someone eligible for low-dose CT screening for lung cancer.
Yes, you mentioned that in 2013, lung cancer screening was approved by USPSTF. And then in 2015 by Medicare. The current guidelines include, or the eligibility criteria includes individuals that are age 50 to 80, and for Medicare, it's 50 to 77 through the year of 77, they have to have a smoking history of 20 pack years or more, and that's equivalent to smoking one pack a day for 20 years or a half a pack a day for 40 years. They have to be currently smoking or quit in the past 15 years, asymptomatic of lung cancer, and Medicare says that you have to have a shared decision-making visit talking about the pros and cons that needs to be completed and documented prior to the first scan. But it's important to know that this criteria has evolved over time as new research came out. Before this criteria started in 2022, I guess it actually came out in 2021, started in 2022. But previously, the age started at age 55 with a 30-pack-year history of smoking. And the reason why the USPSTF and CMS changed their criteria, decreasing the age to 50 and decreasing pack years to 20, is that it was under-selecting large populations that are at high risk for individuals. They were under-selecting high-risk individuals, mainly being women and those of different races, such as African-Americans, who tend to smoke fewer pack years. So with that, I think it's really important for us to understand the criteria that it was and where we are right now. And what's important about the USPSTF criteria is that it is covered by insurance without any cost sharing under the Affordable Care Act and under Medicare. So it eliminates the financial barrier to screening. And that's a really important point. So you have to meet USPSTF or CMS criteria in order to be screened and covered under under insurance. But with that, I do want to say that still a large amount of people, a large cohort of people who are diagnosed with lung cancer would have never met screening criteria if they were screened. The NCCN guidelines actually has a wider criteria that includes people over the age of 50, but with a pack year history of 20 years, or recently they just changed it to, instead of 20 pack years, they've changed it to 20 years of smoking. So we know different populations smoke different, some different rates. Sometimes I'll make the example of Black or African American individuals usually smoke fewer cigarettes per day, but longer in years compared to white individuals who smoke, who usually smoke very heavily and then quit. But African-American individuals are at higher risk for lung cancer, and they actually are diagnosed at an earlier age with less accumulative pack year of smoking. So that is going to increase the rates of that population from being screened. They also dropped the 15-year quit rate, which the American Cancer Society has done too. And they also talked about it's appropriate to use risk prediction models such as PLCOM-2012 risk prediction model for lung screening criteria. So as we move forward with more research around different criterias, I think it's important to know the USPSTF and Medicare guidelines, along with some of the other broader guidelines.
But to be clear, the broader guidelines aren't necessarily covered as well as the Medicare and USPSTF at this time, correct?
Right, correct. So correct, right now it's just 50 to 80, 20 pack year history of smoking, currently smoking, quit in the last 15 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So lung cancer screening centers seem to come in a variety of shapes and sizes. And what I mean by that, a lot of it is dependent on the resources available to the community with regard to the practitioners that are engaged, primary care, specialists, radiologists, and also based on the model type of program that is chosen. And by that, I mean centers are sometimes categorized as centralized or decentralized or a hybrid of the two. Would you please explain these models and certainly describe the one you currently run and discuss the pros and cons of the different models as you see it?
Yeah, different models need different types of resources. So for a centralized model, primary care and providers are referring individuals into a lung screening program. And then that lung screening program is usually ran by specialists or nurse practitioners, and they do everything from A through Z. They do the shared decision-making, visit, they do smoking cessation, and they follow up on their all the results, kind of more of a high-touch screening experience. And then the decentralized model is often just the primary care doctor or nurse practitioner orders the screen, and the results are really followed up by the person who ordered the screen. There may be some oversight kind of at a macro level to be sure that patients are coming back for screening. And then there's the hybrid, which is kind of a combination. It's more collaborative between the primary care provider and the screening program. At UI Health, what we do is kind of a combination. We primary care providers can order a screen and then they'll follow up on the results, or they can refer them to the lung screening program. We have kind of both pathways. But with even if a primary care provider orders a screen and they're following up on the lung RADS 1s, 2s, and 3s, for all the lung RADS 4s that are very suspicious for lung cancer, our program gets involved. We want to be sure that all patients that have a concerning finding has appropriate follow-up. I'll reach out to that provider. We'll discuss the case. I often present it through our multidisciplinary thoracic tumor board. And then often, I will take it from there. After the provider talks to the patient, they'll refer them to me. And then we be sure that they get into all the next steps. It might be a PET scan, might be a biopsy, but all that is done through the program. We also have very strong oversight of our program where we have centralized lung screening scheduling. And that's kind of a different avenue for our program, which I'm going to talk to about that in a few minutes.
Great. Thank you. You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but from the start, the screening coverage has required a shared decision-making session and documentation to be part of the process. Although it's very important, some have felt this, the way it's set up, to be a significant hurdle in the current format. Please describe how your center deals with this and advise some best practices or suggestions for our listeners to deal with this shared decision-making moment.
There's been a lot of debate around shared decision-making visits. Some have seen it as a barrier. Other have seen it as important to be sure that the patient really has the information. This is the only kind of shared decision-making requirement that is actually required, that you have to do it and document it for any screening. So it is an interesting debate. But it is needed for CMS to cover the screening, so it is a prerequisite. We do it at our institution. We've done a lot of educating with our primary care providers to be sure that it is done and all the requirements are made. And then we have developed kind of a templated phrase that they can put into their note to be sure all that documentation is done. Sometimes we will get denials if they don't see all the criteria and the shared decision-making visit documented. So that's what we have done for our providers that order the scan themselves. If they come to our lung screening program, we do a pretty in-depth smoking shared decision-making visit. We do a lot around not only just evaluating them if they meet criteria, but a lot around smoking cessation. And to be sure that they understand the screening, there's sometimes a lot of questions and there's a lot of anxiety about getting screened because they know that since they have a heavy smoking history, they are at risk. That is concerning to them. And I'm able to go through a lot of details about what the screening looks like. I have kind of some pamphlets and some information. Recently, last week, I had a patient that came to see me. He actually had, over the last 10 years, have been referred to get a screen 3 times and never got screened. And finally, his primary care doctor said, please go see Mary. And he came in and he was so incredibly anxious and he was so incredibly guilty that he wasn't able to stop smoking. And he was very concerned about what they're going to find. And so after I kind of talked to him about what are the what his concerns are, what we might find, it actually really decreased his anxiety and he went forward with the screen. Most of our patients, we will see pulmonary nodules. That is a common finding. And so I educate them on what that finding is. The majority of time, and I even told him 50% of the individuals over 50 will have pulmonary nodules. And what is that? It could be some inflammation in their lungs. Sometimes it goes away. Sometimes it stays stable. If it's stable over many years, we consider that benign. But only a few percent, 3 or 4% of the time, those nodules grow, and those are the ones that we're concerned about. And after when this patient thought, oh, only 3 or 4% of the time it's concerning. And then I said, when it is concerning, these are the steps that we'll do. And that really helped this individual, and it helps a lot of my patients to understand what screening is to decrease their anxiety about it.
It makes perfect sense and a good explanation. I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but the term navigation or nurse navigator often comes up when we're talking about lung cancer screening. Can you touch on what the importance of a nurse navigator may have in certain centers?
Yeah, so navigation has changed our program. We have a nurse lung cancer navigator after the patient is actually diagnosed with lung cancer, and she's involved from steps A through Z. But in the screening realm, we actually have a lung screening coordinator, and she has been very instrumental in helping patients get scheduled and follow up for screening. So how we do it is she started a couple years ago, and we do prospective scheduling. So it doesn't matter who places the low-dose CT order within our system. It could be me. It could be our primary care physicians in different offices. It could be our federal qualified healthcare centers, our partner centers. Whoever places that order, she will see it on our dashboard and actually reach out to that patient to get them screened or get them scheduled for screening. She also, at that time, just double checks the criteria to be sure that they meet criteria. Particularly, some providers may not be as well versed on the criteria, just to be sure that they meet the criteria. We don't want to have any scans that are denied. And sometimes it's just an issue of needing to add it to the note, which we can easily do with the provider. And then she also assesses barriers to getting screened. And one of those being transportation. About 20% of the patients that we see have transportation issues, or it's hard for them to pay for parking. And through a generous grant with the American Lung Association, we provide actual transportation, covering transportation with Uber Health. And we also provide parking vouchers. And this is through a grant with the ALA. And we also have another partner grant with the Coleman Foundation that helps us with our community outreach and helping patients, particularly who have barriers to care, getting into care. And that has been very important to our program.
Great, great. You mentioned this also, the smoking cessation programs. How important is it for a center that refers people for lung cancer screening to offer smoking cessation in this situation?
I think it is a cornerstone of our program. It's incredibly important. I'm a certified tobacco treatment specialist, and I talk about smoking cessation with all of my patients. It doesn't matter if they're coming in for lung screening or pulmonary nodules. And we do kind of an in-depth conversation with that. I use motivational interviewing for them to understand what their connection to smoking and what are the possible action plans that they can come up with in order to help them stop. The majority of people want to stop smoking, but the tobacco industry has made this product incredibly addictive. With that, smoking not only causes lung cancer, but it causes at least 12, maybe 15 other types of cancers. And we want to prevent our patients that we served getting other cancers. And it also causes 25 other chronic diseases. So if we can get patients to stop smoking, it will be important for their health, not only just prevention of lung cancer, but also preventing a lot of other illnesses. With that, also, I work with patients that are already diagnosed with lung cancer. And we know that people who are diagnosed with a cancer, any cancer, if they quit smoking, their outcomes are better. Treatment works better. There are less side effects. Their survival is longer, and they're less likely to recur or get another second smoking-related cancer.
So once the individual has been screened, and assuming all is well, they ought to report back in a year. Now, of note, the return rate has been surprisingly low, with some centers reporting 30 to 40% of patients only returning after the first year. Please discuss this and some of the best practices that can be employed to improve this return rate.
So it's really interesting. I've been doing a lot of work on our adherence rates, and I'm so happy that you asked this question because it's something that we've been working really hard on. You talked about the low adherence rates, and when you look at the literature, it will talk about different populations that are harder to reach. And what has been published is people who are Black or Hispanic individuals, those who currently smoke, have lower level of education, Medicare and Medicaid individuals, those who are in rural areas, low outpatient healthcare usage, and decentralized lung screening program. And it's interesting because the same cohort that they are talking about that are hard to reach and don't adhere to screening are exactly the patients that we serve at UI Health in Chicago. We serve a minority population on the south and west side of Chicago. Our population is about 75% minority, 65% African-American, 13% Hispanic, 4% Asian. Low levels of education, high school or less is over 50%. 28% are less than high school. The annual income, 43% of our individuals screened live on less than $15,000 a year. Another 13% between $15,000 and $30,000. 36% Medicare and 41% Medicaid. So the published population that this says these are hard to reach individuals, these are not are the population that doesn't hear. Well, let me tell you about our return rates. We are really excited about this. We looked at return rates from 2021 through 2024, and we have had an upward trajectory because of the systems that we have in place to be sure that our patients are coming back. And mainly that is adding our lung screening coordinator or a navigator kind of role. In 2021, first of all, the rates, our definitions is, are we screening at an optimal time, acceptable, or overdue? Optimal meaning between 11 and 15 months, so really within that year. Acceptable if they're screened within 15 to 24 months, so a little bit of lag. And then overdue if they're over 24 months or 2 years. In 2021, our optimal was only 40%, kind of what they're talking about. That was published, acceptable another 24%, so at acceptable rate. But now in 2024, our optimal is 71% with acceptable another 15%. So we're at over 85% of our patients are being comes back and are adherent to acceptable or optimal level. So we're really excited about that. Our overdue rates went from 35% down to 14%. So we are really happy about the work that we're doing, and it doesn't take a whole lot. This is just because we're constantly looking at the data. We see that our patients are no-showing, and we call them right away. We talk to them why they weren't able to make it to their scan. We get them rescheduled. If they have a barrier, we address it, and also our proactive scheduling. So I think that if we can do it, and this population, I think anybody can do it.
Yes, you're right. That's a challenging population, and you should be proud of what you've been able to turn around. That's great.
Thank you.
So I wanted to turn a little bit to some risk prediction models and also the use of biomarkers. I know there's several companies developing serum biomarkers for the detection of cancers by way of a simple blood draw. Some of these tests are for multiple cancers to be detected, and some are specific to lung cancer. The lung cancer biomarkers are often studied in a way to help decrease the number of false positives of the low-dose CT scan and used to help advise the patient about their risk in having lung cancer or not. Can you share some thoughts on the risk prediction models and also biomarkers that your center may participate in using?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic, and I try to keep up to date. There's a lot of different companies doing this, and they're very innovative, and it's really interesting to kind of watch it play out. And it can complement low-dose CTs, and it's hoping to decrease false positive rates and enhance risk stratification. And I think that's where they can be very valuable. Most of them are not FDA approved yet, and they have significant cost to them. They're not covered by insurance, or maybe it's variable if they are covered by insurance. So with that, for our population, they would not be able to access that just because of the cost to it. But with that being said, I think it's really important that particularly minority populations and different populations are included in the research around different products like this. So we have been in discussion with some of these companies, and we are using some of this, but in the research realm.
Right.
So it is being done at our institution, but it is under research, so there is no cost to the patient. So that's where we are right now.
Sounds appropriate. Yep. So although the low-dose CT scan is designed for screening for early-stage lung cancer, the reality is, and certainly documentation and literature supports the fact, as you've mentioned already, other tobacco-related conditions can be suggested by the findings on the scan. A report of emphysema is not uncommon. The finding of coronary calcification occurs frequently, since, again, these individuals who have had a smoking history have risks for COPD and cardiac disease. Can you please comment on this and how your center deals with these findings? What are some of the recommendations to the patients and or referring physicians as a result?
Yeah, so this is something that I do for all the patients that come see me. After their low-dose CT, they come back to see me for the results, and I really use the scan as a teachable moment. I'll pull up the imaging of the scan. I'll kind of orient the patient of this is your left lung, this is your right lung, and this is your windpipe. And we kind of go through and look at the scan. And often patients will say that they feel fine. They have no cough. They're not short of breath. Their smoking isn't really impacting them. And I'll say, let's just see what your lungs look like. See what your lungs are telling you. And when we pull up the scan, I'll point out the nodules, which are, you know, a frequent finding with lung screening, but I'll also show them the emphysema in their lungs. And I explain to them that these are actual holes in their lungs due to smoking. And then I just kind of stop talking for a moment and let the patient take that in. And they're kind of looking at it. And then they talk more like, well, can we fix the holes? What can we do about them? And I said, well, once they're damaged, they can't be repaired, but we can prevent them. We can work together to try to prevent them from getting worse. And then I kind of talk to them about some action plans that we can do. And often patients that never wanted to quit before, when they see a picture of their lungs, it is their call to action to actually quit smoking. And that has been a valuable, just using a picture of their own lungs has been a valuable tool to help them learn about their own lung health. We also look at the coronary artery calcification, and I double check to be sure that they're on a statin. Maybe they need to be on a higher statin. Maybe they need to talk to their primary care doctor about that. And then I'll connect with the primary care doctor. So I think it's incredibly important that we take all of the information that we can find from a scan to help our patients understand their, not just their lung history, but, you know, their history from, you know, cardiac history and their smoking history, and kind of seeing how their lungs look. And I incorporate health coaching into all my sessions.
Very good. Very good. I believe you're also part of the CIBL Consortium at Mass General Hospital. Can you tell us, tell our listeners about CIBL and its role in the detection of lung cancers?
Well, so CIBL is kind of a new cutting-edge AI machine learning tool that was developed by MIT and Mass General Hospital. It was published 2 years ago. Their results were published 2 years ago. And what it is designed to do, it's an AI algorithm that looks at one low-dose CT, and it predicts that individual will be develop lung cancer in the next 6 years. It gives you six scores. 1 year, 2 year, three, four, all the way out to 6 years. And it is able to predict if that individual will develop lung cancer. And the cool thing about it is you don't need any additional clinical information. You don't need to tell them how old they are or how much they've been smoking or if they, you know, none of that information. Currently, right now, we have USPSTF that we have to have the smoking history and the age, or some of the risk prediction models where you have to put in a lot of other information, family history, or if they have COPD. This just looks at that single low-dose CT, and it gives you a risk prediction. If the patient may may develop lung cancer in the future. And what has been very interesting about it, it was validated in three cohorts, in the National Lung Screening Cohort, and then in Mass General Hospital Cohort and the Lung Screening Cohort. But the majority of those individuals were white. The National Lung Screening Trial was 91% white. And that was also a research. So Mass General did it in their cohort, which is not a research cohort. It's a lung screening cohort. And then they also did it in Taiwan. And in that cohort, it was those men, Taiwanese men who smoked and women who didn't smoke. And they women who don't smoke in Asia are actually getting lung cancer at about the same rates as men who smoke. And for all three of these cohorts, it was validated, and the findings were really good. The AUC on year one ranged from 0.86 to 0.94 that first year. So this may be something that we can look to in the future to risk prediction, use a risk prediction to see on that baseline scan when they need another follow-up, or which are the highest risk patients or which are the lower risk patients. So it's really interesting. But we did form a civil consortium of four sites. It includes us at UIC or UI Health, along with Baptist and WellStar. So we have a couple different screening sites, large sites, rural, urban, with different populations. And we're looking to validate it in different populations. We have some publications coming up, and I'll be excited to share the results with you in the future about that. And we're also doing prospective studies to see if we can use AI to really predict and change how we conduct lung screening in the future.
Sounds like some exciting research to look forward to.
Yes.
Now, before closing, I wanted you to respond to a question that I believe many practitioners in the field get from patients as well as other colleagues. With the growing number of individuals who have never smoked being diagnosed with lung cancer, often in an advanced stage, why is lung cancer screening not recommended more widely in the population?
So research, you know, we're always looking at the research, and right now lung screening has only been within those with a heavy smoking history or with a smoking history that may be changing in the future. Like Sybil just showed in the Asian population with women who never smoked, we're able to predict pretty well what population will develop lung cancer. But the rise of lung cancer in people who have never smoked is probably due to a combination of genetics and environmental exposures and some socioeconomic factors. So those kind of combined. And we're hoping in the future that some of the new tools that we have, the risk prediction, the biomarkers, things will be changing to be sure that all individuals who are at risk for lung cancer have screening and have the ability to know if they're at risk or not. And as we say, anybody with lungs are at risk for lung cancer. Right. We know that 20% of those individuals who are diagnosed with lung cancer have never smoked before. Another 20% have smoked very low rates, very mild rates. And we want to be sure that everybody gets into the right care when diagnosed.
Well said. So I want to thank you for a real comprehensive discussion of current thoughts on low-dose CT screening for lung cancer. Is there anything further you'd like to add? You've covered quite a bit.
Yeah, so I've been in this field for about 10 years exclusively, and there's been just tremendous progress in lung cancer research with new treatments, targeted therapies, immunotherapy, and we've really been transforming the way that we manage the disease and improving survival rates significantly. And advances in low-dose CT screening now allows us to detect lung cancer earlier when it's more treatable, and screening truly saves lives. And we have all these efforts underway to really enhance screening through refined criteria, risk stratification, integration of emerging tools like biomarkers and AI, such as Sybil, which holds really great, great promise for improving early detection and outcomes. So it's just so important that we remember that anybody with lungs can get lung cancer. And thankfully, the narrative around lung cancer is changing. There's more awareness, there's more innovation, and most importantly, there's more hope.
Great. So thank you again for taking the time today and for your work in promoting this important life-saving screening for lung cancer for those at risk. To our listeners, if you want to hear more regarding all things respiratory-related, we have a great archive of discussions on our show feeds. Be sure again to subscribe and rate Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platform, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.